Welcome to the Bear Arms Show. Your fun, sometimes witty source for news, commentary, and interviews. We focus on efforts to protect and restore the right to keep and bear arms. Arm yourself with the information you need to protect your rights. With your hosts, John and Michael.
Today is April 26, 2016, and you are listening to the Bear Arms Show. My name is John Willett. Joined as always by my brother, Mr. Michael Willett.
Good evening. Sir? I'm doing good. How are you?
I am doing well. All right.
Spring is in the air.
Spring is in the air.
The moose are moving around. The elk are moving around.
The moose and the elk are moving around.
The moose and the elk are moving around and eating my trees.
Eating your trees.
Eating my trees in my yard.
Very nice. All right. So this episode of the Bear Arms Show, which is number 41, we're going to be talking with Keith Pantaleone. You might remember him from his time as a person who was arrested for firearms possession and then was vindicated when the judge basically said he didn't trust anything the police said about the situation. After that, we're going to talk a little bit about Fast and Furious.
Because that's making me furious.
Yeah, yeah. But there's been movement on it, so we want to talk about that quickly. We're going to do a quick NJ Safe update. And then we're going to do Call in the Shot segment, quick news. But before we get to any of that, we're going to go to the Black Bag Resources Words of Wisdom. Take it away, Mr. Mike.
And the Black Bag Resources Words of Wisdom for episode 41 come to you from Walt Rausch. I believe that's how it's pronounced. And he said, if you have to use deadly force, shoot until the threat ceases to be one.
Shoot until the threat ceases to be one, as in a threat.
Correct.
Good one. I like it.
Me too. That's what I always tell my students.
That's what you tell your students?
Shoot until there's no more threat.
Are you doing self-defense stuff, or is it still mostly intro to firearms and you know, some of the intermediate stuff? Are you getting into some of the more advanced stuff?
Yeah, I do. I do a concealed weapons course Idaho, for Idaho, and it works. It's good for Montana as well, and it's good for the Washington license if you want to apply there.
Montana, Idaho, or Washington.
Right.
Take your class.
Right.
Roger that. Where can you find it?
You can find that at integrityarmory.com.
That's right. So the northeastern U.S.
North Idaho. If you live in North Idaho or northwest. We live in the northwest, John.
I'm sorry, northwest, not northeast. I'm the northeast. Well, I'm not really northeast. I'm just kind of east.
Yeah, so if you're in the inland northwest, I can help you out.
Right on, right on. So I have an interview this week with Mr. Keith Pantaleone. We get a little philosophical at times, but we're going to hop into that right now.
This segment is brought to you by NJ Concealment Furniture. Come and find it.
Joining us on the show tonight, we have Mr. Keith Pantaleone. If you're not familiar with Keith's story, you may want to go back and check the archives. Keith was the subject of what's the best way to phrase this? An unlawful arrest?
I prefer to think of it as a judicial misadventure.
A judicial misadventure. That feels like a glass half full kind of way of putting it. That's probably good for your mental health, right?
Well, it keeps me sane and less bitter.
Right. Okay. So, I'm very excited to have you on. This is something that that you and I have been talking about doing probably since I don't know, October 3rd of last year.
Yeah, no particular date in particular.
That's right. Keith was one of our panelists at NJ SafeCon. He'll be returning this year as a speaker on July 30th. So definitely get out there and get registered for NJ SafeCon so you can hear Keith's presentation. I know you have some great ideas that you're working on for what you're going to talk about, and I know I'm excited to see it. With that, wanted to have you on tonight. We were going to talk a little bit. There were some things that you had said at the last conference I actually kind of wanted to follow up with you on, because you had come out with some very, I thought, insightful comments based on the questions you were asked and the topics that came up. You had joined our Growing the Second Amendment Movement panel, and then also a panel that we had called Targets in New Jersey Gun Law. It was you and Shanine there. And I guess before we get into that too much, I'm curious, how'd you find the conference?
It was awesome. It was excellent. I mean, it was refreshing to be in New Jersey and be surrounded by like-minded people. Now, that doesn't mean that we agreed upon everything on every single situation or issue, but the main thing that we did agree upon is that self-defense is the right of every sentient being, to paraphrase and steal a quote from Optimus Prime. But we basically spoke about how, as a community, we're too laser focused on seeing things in one light, and we apply that lens across the board, where when we're talking about the Second Amendment, we should just stay focused on the Second Amendment, and we should expand our message to our detractors and to those we would never traditionally ever think of, for whatever reason, one way or the other, to approach with this message, because maybe of cultural reasons, maybe historical reasons, or maybe it just never occurred to us that, hey, have we ever tried reaching out to this community or that community, or have we just tried to make it seem what it really is, a natural, normal thing to say, hey, I like life and I would like to do whatever it took to be able to preserve that.
You know, it's interesting how that idea kind of plays off of it, because based on things that you had said at the conference and what you're saying now, it sounds like, and I'd agree with this, you advocate a focus on the message, avoiding other political messages, because the Second Amendment and the right to self-defense is distinct from other arguments that people might characterize as conservative. But at the same time, maybe expanding how that message is applied and targeted and getting it out to other people.
Exactly. I mean, for example, the First Amendment, is that considered a liberal agenda or a conservative? No. The First Amendment basically says, speak your mind, speak your peace. But whatever you're saying better be true. If you're making accusations or characterization, and we have mechanisms of a civil nature to take care of people who would abuse and try to use it for nefarious purposes. But other than that, you can say the most racist, bigoted, hateful thing to me, and you might get my blood boiling. But I'm not going to try to stop you from saying it. As a matter of fact, I might thank you for exposing yourself and then giving me a little practice to shoot down point by point your arguments or your demonstration of lack of intelligence. And it's the same with the Second Amendment. It's it was put there for two reasons. One, to defend ourselves, and to say a point that a lot of people don't like to say, but it is absolutely true. It is a check against those we entrust with the public trust. And it sometimes, and history has shown this time and time again, that those who are put in a position of public trust will forget that they're there because the public trusts them, and they will abuse that to their own ends, and sometimes more decisive, more final methods of protecting our individual liberty has to be employed. And for obvious reasons, people don't like to talk about that. I don't even like talking about it or thinking about it, but it is a fact. What's the best way to encourage a bully? Do nothing and take it. when you do nothing and take it, you're encouraging that bully to be more of a bully. I love those ads where it says stop bullying. And I'm thinking to myself, hey, you know, that's a great message. Why don't you guys take your own advice?
Okay. That's interesting. So one of the pieces there that you were talking about was engagement. You know, and maybe being engaged in conversation or debate with a person. You know, if they start spouting some of those things that are, you know, racist, bigoted, or whatever it might be. And I'm not talking about like what the social justice warrior would call racist or bigoted, but like, you know, things that are right. Can you have an engagement with that person that's productive, or what do you think?
I've actually done it before. And usually if they do it, it's been my experience. It's out of habit. It's out of culture. And 9 times out of 10, it's not out of malice. The ones who truly do it out of malice will never let terms and will never let bigoted and hateful terms slip out of their mouths. They're more cold and calculating. And I've also witnessed this. So those who might use, let's just say, a dated term, you know, I'll smile and we'll talk about, and we'll find common ground. And 9 times out of 10, I find that, oh, okay. They don't realize that, okay, it might not be a big thing to them, or it might not have the same impact with the intended impact when they say or express it in a certain way. So I can understand that, especially when you're talking with old timers from secluded areas. I don't care if it's north, south, west, east. Those are the times I will usually run into that. But again, 9 times out of 10, we find that we come to common ground on more things than not. Now, the ones who are really bigoted, they're easy to spot. And I have a test that I would always put forth. If that person claims to not be bigoted, the next question is, all right, describe your daughter's ideal husband, right? They'll say, oh, you know, works a good job, pillar of the community, blah, 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 blah. Great. Now, let's just tweak it a little bit. Let's make him black or Asian or Hispanic or blah, 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 blah. Would you still care if your daughter married him? And the looks on their face is more expressive than anything that comes out of their mouths. So as far as if somebody says something that's that can be termed as bigoted or hateful, I look at the context, because are they saying it to get a rise out of me? Is this how they truly feel? Because if they're irrational, it doesn't matter what the topic is. We can be talking about, hey, did you see the game last night? They're not going to be coherent or worth the time or energy. But if it's out of, well, they might say colored folks or people of color, which I always crack up when I hear the SJW say people of color. It's like, really? You're just going to bring us back to 1930s language? Great job, guys. But yeah, I always look at the context, and 9 times out of 10, most people are good.
So what you're saying is in a few more years, the United Negro College Fund won't sound so dated. Is that, we're just going to hit that whole full revolution?
It's just going to, as a matter of fact, we're already at the point where it's probably forward thinking.
Really? It's forward thinking. Oh, boy. All right. I like it. Kind of along those lines, we've talked a little bit about the engagement and, you know, how you approach those debates. And it sounds like you would have most of these conversations in person rather than online. Is that something that that's designed?
Okay, so I'm gonna let out a secret here, and it's not really a secret to those who've been paying attention. If you ever see me in a debate with somebody online, my purpose is not there to debate the person. It's basically to expose the points from both sides. So it's basically I'm having the conversations from both ends. The funny thing is, the one that's debating me does not realize this until it's too late. And if they go back, and most people really don't go back and read the interactions, they'll realize that, hey, I've been set up. Yes, you have. Because I'll ask specific questions and I'll phrase it in a certain way. I remember on Twitter, there was this one gun control advocate or self-proclaimed gun control advocate who claimed that constitutional carry is a horrible idea and, you know, we need some type of oversight. We need this. We need that. So I basically called them what they are, a statist. Now, that sounds like, oh, you must be one of those anarchy types. No, I'm just one of those types that don't believe that anybody has the right to rule over anybody. And if you violate what I like to call natural laws, laws that any government, any person, any decent human being would say, yeah, I would consider that a crime, and yeah, I'd consider that requiring punishment.
Is that outside Locke? That's John Locke, right?
You got it.
Yeah. I don't think people would really call him an anarchist, would they?
See, we're getting a little off topic, but right. I'll just say this. People confuse anarchy with chaos.
Okay.
When anarchy literally means without rulers. Some people will drop the R and the S, will drop the R and say, oh, you mean without rules? No, rulers. You see, overseers. There are always rules. But who will referee? Who prevents you from killing somebody or doing something horrible? Like, do you actually need somebody standing? But that's pretty much off topic. Anyway, So I go back to setting somebody up. So I call them a statist. And the definition of a statist is one who is a firm believer that we need central authority to regulate morality. I don't remember the exact Webster's Dictionary definition, but that's basically the context I used it in. So I asked them a few setup questions like, okay, so you're basically saying that guns are bad because you want to keep them out of the hands of children. So I showed them a youth shooting league. So you want to keep it out of these children? And I think it was like an Olympic team of some sorts. Like, oh, no, that's fine. It's regulated. Oh, regulated. You mean like, and I kept feeding them until the point where the person just blurts out, I just don't want renegades to have access to arms without government oversight. And then I send them the link to the textbook definition of a statist.
There you go.
And it was at that point, I really didn't have to argue. Thank you for proving my point. So you could block me from future interactions. You could try to take it down, but I already have screenshots that are posted somewhere. So thank you for proving my point. And that's the only time I will really have a quote-unquote online debate, when I know the general public can stumble across it, read it, and go, maybe I should rethink my position, or, you know, I always kind of suspected this, or, hey, you know, I was totally wrong.
Okay. So I guess that kind of leads us into maybe how you came to approach, political dialogue in the way that you do. One of the questions that our moderator at the conference, Ainsley Reynolds, had asked you was whether or not you you were an activist before your incident with the police there, and you basically said that you had an awareness of the political arguments around it, but it was more I think the word would be esoteric or theoretical for you.
Yes,
where your incident brought it to be much more real, much more immediate. So I wonder if you could talk to us a little bit about that evolution.
Absolutely. So to me, it felt like a two-part question. Were you an activist? A is what I kind of got from it. And B, were you an activist? Were you an activist for this after the fact, or before the fact? So when I said that I was aware, yes, I was an activist, but it was more on First Amendments as far as – and when everybody hears First Amendment, they always think, oh, free speech. No. I mean all four points of the First Amendment. I'm talking about redress of government. Like, there were certain questions about certain events that we won't get into here, but people should be able to read between the lines that what was told to us didn't match what the facts were telling us. So – we redress our grievances to the government, and they were less than cooperative and compliant. The other is religious freedoms. Now, there are those who believe one thing versus another, and as long as your beliefs do not infringe on the natural rights of others, go to town. You know, that whole libertarian mindset, These are the things I was focused on. And of course, free speech and freedom of the press, you know, the ability to report what you observe so that the community at large is also aware. It doesn't mean that you work for NBC or you started your own blog pad, your own blog site, whatever the case may be. It's you observe something and you report it to the community at large that you're I think the term is citizen journalist, if you want to apply a label to it. On that side, I was an activist. The part where I was just aware when it came to the Second Amendment, I was aware that were certain arguments versus how much regulation versus how much individual freedom. Are these laws actually for protection, or is this a piecemeal way of chipping away at people's rights? And for me, again, it was more something that I would observe, and from time to time, I would lean one way or the other. After that event, they pretty much sealed the deal for me. For me, I don't believe anything less than constitutional carry is negotiable, like getting a concealed permit, having to fit all these requirements. They're not there for the reasons that they claim to be there. And what that event that occurred to me, 3 years ago, proved in my mind that is the case. Because the way everything went down, there was no reason whatsoever why I should have been placed in cuffs. There was no reason whatsoever why they should have been there in the first place. There was no reason whatsoever why they searched my place. There was no reason whatsoever why they should have confiscated anything. Because the proof that everything was on the up and up, when I had my day in court and the evidence was laid bare, not only was any actions that they were able to take suppressed, they had to return all, not some, not half, but all of my property.
And that's fantastic. You know, you mentioned concealed carry. And I'm interested if, you know, from a standpoint, some of the more concealed carry is like the what is it
from Indiana?
From Indiana Jones, the Holy Grail, right? Concealed carry is like the Holy Grail for activists in New Jersey, right?
Constitutional carry.
Carry, right? Any kind of carry would be good. How do you come towards other issues related to that with the permits to purchase and the firearms purchaser ID cards and some of those other processes? Do you see a role for background checks? Like how do you view some of those other, you know, issues?
Well, here's the thing. When I first started, I saw a role for background checks. I thought permits and licenses and all that other stuff was a great idea. But then I did a little critical thinking. How many of those actually stopped anything horrific from happening? Right? And 9 times out of 10, if somebody didn't want to sell, if an FFL didn't want to sell to somebody, it wasn't because of the background check 9 times out of 10. It was, for lack of a better term, their instinct, something that they saw in the person that they go, you know what? I don't want to put this dangerous item in that person's hand. Same with car salesmen. Well, if they were more reputable, and that's another topic, but, you know, hey, okay, I don't like this guy's attitude. He seems a little reckless. I don't think I want to give him a 2-ton piece of machinery that can mow down children. I mean, you can use that argument with pretty much any device that's potentially dangerous. And what made me realize that is, one, that the facts and figures show that it really prevented nothing. And all the times they like to tout, oh, see, this background check stopped this person from purchasing. 9 times out of 10, it's a clerical error on a Terry Gilliam Brazil level, where somebody put a B-13, they filled it out wrong. So where it was a Tuttle was the guy ineligible to buy a gun versus Mr. Buttle or whatever the case may be. So 9 times out of 10, if somebody is stopped because of background checks or licenses and fees, it was 9 times out of 10 a clerical error. Now, as far as what sealed the deal for me, the definition, and this is not my definition, this is the Supreme Court definition, of a permit or a license is permission to do something that's been deemed illegal. So if you need a purchasing permit to buy a handgun in New Jersey, de facto, it is illegal to purchase a handgun in New Jersey unless you have a special permission slip from your overseers, I mean from the officers in charge that hands out said slips. So naturally, for a constitutional carry, for a regulation, I'm not a huge fan because inevitably it always leads to registration, then confiscation. And then after confiscation, what happens after that is usually unspeakable. It might be in a compressed time frame as Germany experienced from 1933, I believe, all the way maybe a little bit before 1933, all the way up to 1945, 1946. Or it might be a little more stretched out, currently what the EU is experiencing.
Okay. You know, we're talking a little bit about, you know, basically government abusing their power, essentially, right? And
I like to say they're abusing their trust.
Abusing their trust.
Because when you say power, because when you say powers, you're basically saying that they're above me. I like what Joe Salente is commonly known for saying, is if you look up to those people, and those people being politicians, you're pretty much looking down on yourself.
Okay. You know, that's kind of fair. I always get, I guess my pet peeve is when they say states' rights or the government has a right to this. And that always gets me because I'm like, governments don't have rights. So fair enough. So abuse by government of some of the laws that have been passed.
I would say all. I'd submit to you all.
All. but in particular, NICS denials right now. We know that, let's see here, there is a backlog of over 7,000 NICS denials as of January, and they've stopped processing appeals. So I don't know if we have to wait to see, you know, to see people's rights denied by bureaucracy.
And without due process, I might add.
Yeah.
The very fact that they're no longer taking appeals tells you, hey, it's inconvenient for us to do what's known as due process. So you're pretty much out of luck in exercising your natural right to defend yourself using the most effective tools that technology and the free market has provided to you. And if you try to possess such implements, well, we'll just take away your freedom and quite possibly your life. So what part of that do I disagree with? Well, I'll let you decide.
Okay. I like how you're leaving it open to me. Or all of us. So the last thing I wanted to mention is we did a video highlight of you talking about the easiest way to get a concealed carry permit here in the state of New Jersey. I was wondering if you might want to share that with our listeners. I'm sure many of them know. but you know what you think about the easiest way to carry and what that tells us about New Jersey's laws.
I just couched it in a way that in my personal experience and as in terms of history is if any group or anybody says that you're not allowed to do a certain thing unless it's in their service, they're basically calling you their slave, their minions. And I didn't use those terms specifically in the conference, but that's basically what I was trying to get people to look at it or couch it in those terms, to look at it in that shape, form, or fashion, which is basically to protect yourself, no. But to protect my property and my life, because for lack of a better, well, I think this is the perfect term, because I perceive myself to be royalty and you to be mere peasants. If you want to get a carry conceal, you must pledge fealty and loyalty to me and in service of me and mine. Other than that, you can go kick rocks, is basically what they're saying.
Okay. So I think that goes through some of the things that I wanted to run
run by you. Did you have any other issues you wanted to bring up with us?
Just this one brief one. Now, whenever we're discussing any topic that's near and dear to us, what I would recommend, and if you're, and this is depending on what your objective is. If your objective is to win hearts and minds, first, check out the playing field. And what I like to do is I ask certain questions that seem benign. And if it's and if the person answers to something to the effect of, I never looked at it that way, or I haven't really thought about it, then yes, this is a person you want to engage with. This is a person that you want to lay out the facts and let them decide. Even if the conclusion they come to is not something you agree with, at least the seed has been planted, and who knows, maybe they might come around. If the person does anything to like where they're just spouting off talking points to the point where the conversation is so predictable, you can basically make them say whatever it is that you want them to say to prove your point. Don't waste your time with them unless the whole point is to have the conversation in full view of the public so they can see the true mindset and the true agenda of whoever it is that you're interacting with. And basically, even though you feel you're in the right, there are times where you'll have to look at your own beliefs, because believe it or not, if you were to meet me, I'd say anywhere from 5 to 10 years ago, I would not have these views. To mention, and I'm going to use a social warrior justice term, a triggering term like anarchy, or to say government is force, which, by the way, is something that George Washington said, the founder of this country, that it's force, it's violence, basically. To if you were to approach me with these type of John Locke and I forget the other philosophers who basically were credited for the Magna Carta, which eventually turned into the Articles of Confederation, to the Constitution that we now know, I would look at you like you're nuts. Matter of fact, if 15, 20 years ago, you would have told me that healthcare is not a right, or food and housing is not a right, I'd look at you like you're nuts. But after doing much studying and soul searching and questioning my beliefs, I totally understood that the things that are our rights are things that we don't have to ask permission for. Barring that, everything else, we have to use our labor, our fortune, everything that makes us us, to attain what it is that we want. And doing anything that would deprive another person of that is, quite frankly, theft, criminal, and any crime, the more reprehensible, it doesn't matter how reprehensible or innocuous it might appear, I can always root it down to one root cause: theft. You kill somebody, you murder somebody, you just stole their life and their opportunity for anybody to know them. If you were to assault somebody of a sexual nature, you just basically violated their right on who they can associate with and how. If you shut somebody up, you just took away their voice. You just took away their ability to express themselves. You just took away their ability to live their life as they see fit. It all comes down to theft. And if you were to talk to me like this 20 years ago, I guarantee you I'd look at you like you were nuts. Like, oh, you're one of those crazy people that like to, I don't know, throw Molotov cocktails, and, you know, you like to hang minorities, or you like to do this, you like to do that. And the final message I want to give is, whatever your beliefs are, whether you agree with me or not is not the point. Look at them, examine them. And if you really believe in them, first, find out if the other person is able, not only open to, is even able to process what you're trying to give them. And I guarantee you'll see a lot less of these internet trolling and a lot less animosity if people would just take a step back, take a few seconds, and think about it in those terms.
You know, it's interesting. It's interesting that you said that, because just a couple weeks ago, I had done a segment on the show talking about examining first principles and, you know, deriving policy positions based on really understanding, you know, the principles that, that drive our beliefs. And it sounds like you had to go through kind of a similar process or a similar evolution in determining, you know, where your beliefs really lied as well.
Yeah, I pretty much had a road to Damascus moment. Well, I had many of them, and they helped shape my beliefs. I mean, one of my road to Damascus moments was my luxurious stay at Hudson County Correctional Facilities, courtesy of taxpayers and malfeasance of the two officers who will remain nameless. But if you do a quick Google search and read the court proceedings, you'll figure out who they are. And that it's the fact that they probably and to this day, I'm willing to bet dollars to pesos, they believe what they did was right. Breaking into a man's home, taking his property, kidnapping him, threatening violence in his own home when he did nothing but peaceably mind his own business.
The other follow-up I had from what you were just sharing with us is something, you know, that I really don't think about. I grew up with kind of a reverence for the Constitution, you know, even though, you know, it's been improved over the past couple hundred years, because it wasn't born perfect. And I'm just curious. The way that you were saying, you know, how you used to view things versus how you do now with that, you know, when someone comes and they start talking about, you know, reverence for the Constitution and for how it lays out our system of government, are there people that comes across to as you know, something racist or something misogynistic or whatever it is at its core, and that's why they can't hear the argument?
I wouldn't say racist. They suffer from the same thing that the so-called left or the so-called right. But see, this is the funny thing that I've observed. Both sides suffer from the same disease. The only difference is the way the symptoms manifest themselves. And it's absolute religious fervent belief in their beliefs, which for it to be a belief, you know, that you'd have to do that. But it's to the point where because of their beliefs, they can do no wrong. And that's where I have reservations. And naturally, of course, you know, there are certain beliefs that no matter who you are, you'd have to know, not agree, but just know that it's just reprehensible. But that's another topic. But those who have, for example, there are those who have a fervent belief in the Communist Manifesto or communism or whatever the case may be, but never read the Ten Planks or never read the works of those that they're preaching. And then if you bring up that, hey, so that I guess you like central banks. No, what do you mean? That's plank number 7. Oh, you're a crony capitalist, blah, 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 blah. Or, you know, there are those who say the Constitution makes it so if it's in the Constitution, the government has the right to do it. Well, if you believe that, you've totally missed the point of the Constitution. It's chains on those that we give a public trust to. It doesn't give them extra privileges. And those who have a belief one way or the other, whatever their beliefs are, it's not the beliefs. Well, depending on the beliefs, it's not the beliefs that that usually make me pause. It's their expression of their beliefs and the actions they do because of said beliefs. That's what I look at the most.
Okay.
Oh, and to answer your question in a short and to bring up another point or my final point really, my thinking was the thinking of my parents, which is they came here, you know, land of opportunity, place to find a job or start a business, and then all that other political stuff, they weren't really paying attention. And I say that because they were advocating for the same things that was going on in my country, in my parents' country, which was Haiti, in case anybody's, you know, curious about it. They were doing the exact same things, but the thing was, when they did it over there, it was pretty obvious it was bad. But the fact that they were so comfortable, they had all the creature comforts and they were able to experience things that they weren't able to experience over there, they didn't see that, maybe it's a bad idea that they're starting to lean towards the same practices that they were doing in Haiti. And as a matter of fact, they were actually advocating for it. And naturally, being brought up in a household like that, I would follow that. And then other things that happened along my life that made me question that, and here I am today.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir, for joining us this evening. It was a pleasure having you.
Thank you for having me, and it was great allowing me to run my mouth and just basically act like I knew what I was talking about, but hey.
No, you know what? I think we have fertile ground for future conversation.
It sounds great to me.
Arm yourself with information to protect your rights. www.beararmsshow.com.
And that was our interview with Mr. Keith Pantaleone. We'd like to thank him for joining us. You can find him on Twitter. We'll have a link to his Twitter in the show notes. It's Soju's Warrior. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but that's how it reads. And his name on there is like, oh yeah, that guy.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. So moving on, we're going to be talking about Fast and Furious. This is something that we've been reporting on for quite some time. Back before there was even a podcast, we had a blog called Firearms Anonymous. And this is actually one of the most read articles on that blog way back in 2010.
Well, we've been doing this for 6 years.
Well, we weren't doing a podcast, but yeah, we've been doing the online thing, I suppose, for the gun stuff.
Yeah. 12 years of experience here on the Bear Arms Show.
We're counting each of our 6 years of experience.
Yes.
And our show is still awful.
Still awfully awesome.
Awfully awesome. Yeah. But yeah, one of our most read articles back from Firearms Anonymous was about Project Gunwalker. We were referring to it at the time because we didn't know about Fast and Furious, right?
Right.
And, the article that we had that was popular, was because I had found, some press announcements about how, recovery money, you remember the big recovery projects and all the spending that they did. Well, some of that had been used to shore up Project Gunwalker. No, actually, I think officially the name was Project Gunrunner. Was like the overarching ATF program that Fast and Furious had fallen under. And for the people who don't remember, Fast and Furious was one of several programs where firearms were walked across borders to criminals. It happened in Miami and some other places
with intention all across the southern United States.
Yeah. Now
I believe it was Miami for sure.
Yeah.
Louisiana for sure. Yeah, Texas and yep. New Mexico.
And Fast and Furious had become the section of that with the most attention drawn to it because it was the source of the firearms or among the firearms that were used the day that Agent Brian Terry was killed. That Brian Terry was an agent with the Border Patrol and he had been murdered by basically a Mexican gang, and firearms found at the scene were linked to Fast and Furious. And the only reason we ever heard about Fast and Furious, or the reason we had first heard about these programs, is because gun stores were complaining that they were being told to let these guns get into the hands of people that they didn't want to sell them to. And the ATF was saying, don't worry about it. We have it covered. We're tracking these people. And then they were surveilling these people who were buying these guns as they brought them to the border and then transferred them to people who took them across the border without interdicting the guns. They let the guns go to Mexico. Okay. Agents testified to this under oath in front of Congress as whistleblowers, saying that they were ordered to stand down. They were not allowed to interdict the firearms and that they're being transferred to Mexico. They knew where they were going. And there was no plan to get these guns out of the hands of criminals. The plan essentially was that the firearms would be recovered as they were found at crime scenes is the only logical conclusion because they weren't being tracked.
Oh, no, the one agent went to Radio Shack.
Right. You had one agent go to Radio Shack and attempted a makeshift tracking system of sorts, and it wasn't. And that was one firearm out of the thousands that were walked to the criminal cartels of Mexico. So that's, you know, for a refresher of what Fast and Furious and the overall project was, that's what it was. And no one's been held to account. No one's been forced to even admit that they were the person who approved this project. And all the so-called fall guys, none of them were disciplined. They were able to resign. They were able to keep their pensions. There's been no
discipline. Moved to another agency and promoted.
There's been no discipline associated with Fast and Furious. All the people that participated in it, that approved it, and who are ultimately responsible for providing the firearms that were used to kill Agent Brian Terry, no one's been prosecuted. No one's been found guilty of anything.
Among other people murdered by those firearms.
Right. Along with thousands, or maybe not thousands, hundreds, I'm sure, of Mexican citizens. And Mexico wasn't even told that they were doing this. Okay. So that's a reminder of what Fast and Furious is. Now we find out the Justice Department, who may or may not have been aware about what was happening beforehand, certainly found out what was happening after the investigation began, and then did everything they possibly could to prevent the truth from being known, and wanted to, and actually went forward with this idea of using the NRA as a distraction for reporters because they didn't want them looking into Fast and Furious and these other programs. So they were using the fact that NRA had sent a letter to say to reporters, this is evidence that there's nothing there because NRA is interested in it. Right.
Right.
So, basically, they did everything they could to cover this up and keep anyone from being held responsible. And they made political calculations that they were going to be able to stonewall the investigation, to stonewall the media, and never be held to account for the things that they did, for the crimes that were committed. And no one was going to have to pay any penalty. And then they went forward, and the people who were raising their concerns about this were used to blame and to say, well, the fact that they're upset about this proves to you that there's no there there. Which says this, you know, to the people out there in the media who are like, oh, Fast and Furious, there's nothing there. Guess what? Your biases were used to manipulate you. You are a victim in this situation. And the biases that you have against people were used to further the ends of someone else at your expense. Congratulations. Now you're complicit. All right. So there's that. You have anything else to say about it?
Burn it all down.
Burn it all down. Not what I was looking for, but okay.
They should all go to jail. Every last one of them. The executive, branch of government from the the people who thought up this plan to those who implemented it and those who knew about it. In here, it specifically says, you know, they tried to make it an, this is an executive privilege and so on and so forth. Throw them all in jail.
I think whoever.
I mean,
comes
are
in,
they accessories to a felony committed with the firearm?
I think whoever comes in the next administration, which I mean, obviously, if Hillary wins, it's not going to happen. But whoever, if a Republican wins, or if someone other than a crony wins, hopefully, there needs to be a real investigation by the administration, and people need to be brought to justice for this.
You know it's going to happen.
What?
Obama's going to pardon Holder before he gets out.
Can't pardon himself. Can't pardon all of them.
Yeah, he's going to have a great big list. I pardon these people, and it's going to be pages and pages.
I don't know. I don't. You know what? Names. I don't think he'll do it. I think he's got enough hubris. I think he's got enough hubris to think that they'll get away, and that issuing a mountain of pardons the day he leaves hurts his legacy, and he cares about his legacy more than anything else. If he issues a mountain of pardons, that hurts him, I think. I think that he wouldn't expect that anyone would have to pay for what they did.
Yeah, his buddies in Congress and the Senate will...
They'll say, oh, so the country can move on. We're not going to do anything. And I think that's unacceptable.
That is unacceptable.
I think it's unacceptable. I think someone needs to pay...
People lost their lives.
Someone needs to pay for this. Someone needs to pay for Benghazi.
Yes.
All right. Moving on. NJ SafeCon. Now, as of today, we are approximately 94 days out. Approximately.
Approximately 94 days and 37 seconds out.
That's right. We have a good slate of speakers. We have some that we're working on getting who, whoever you are listening, you will be pleasantly surprised when you find out. We got firm up details, but we're going to have a very exciting slate of speakers. We're going to have a lot of cool things happening at the event. We're going to have a lot of great exhibitors, great sponsors. To name a few. Are you interested? Do you know who our
I'm
sponsors
ready.
Are? Are you ready to get this
tell
on?
Tell me. Won't you tell me?
Why don't you tell me, man? I don't understand. Why don't you just tell me who they are?
I have a fever, and the only thing that can cure it is some sponsors.
That's right. I got a fever. The only prescription. Know who the sponsors are. All right. Gold sponsors. Now, just as last year, NRA ILA. They're in. They're ready. They'll be there. It's going to be sweet.
NRA sponsoring a pro-gun event in New Jersey.
Who would have thought? Gun for Hire, and I should mention Gun for Hire Radio and Bear Arms Show are going to be teaming up for a Monster Cast again.
Monster Casting.
Monster Casting. That's right. Sunday. Well, in this case, Saturday.
Be there.
That's right.
With a Monster Cast.
That's right. Mike the Bigfoot Willett. All right, Liberty Office Suites, their sponsor. That's where we're going to be for the CLE course. Definitely sign up for the CLE course if you're at all interested in New Jersey firearms law or self-defense law. We're going to have the experts there.
The experts.
Attorney Evan Knappen is going to be doing the Boom. New Jersey firearms class. Guess what happened just this week?
What happened?
The state of New Jersey approved our application, New Jersey firearms law course. Is now good for 3 hours of continuing legal education credit.
3 hours of CLE credit.
That's from right.
This class.
So you can sign up and get that. Now, the application is in for the Law of Self-Defense. It's been approved before in a slightly different format. So we're expecting that approval to come quickly. That'll be another 3 hours. So if you sign up for the New Jersey Safe Conference CLE courses, you're going to be getting a total of 6 hours of CLE credit at a price of $350.
What?
That's right. From the experts on New Jersey firearms law and Andrew Branca, the expert on the law of self-defense. So literally, Evan Knappen wrote the book on New Jersey firearms law. Andrew Branca wrote the book on the law of self-defense. It's going to be fantastic. That's the day before the conference. So guess what? If you go to the CLE class, and you can sign up if you're not an attorney at the reduced price of $300, because we don't have to do all the CLE stuff for you, right? So at the reduced price of $300, you can get in there, learn about the law from the experts who wrote the books, the definitive books on the subjects, in my opinion. And you can get all that learning in, even if you're not an attorney.
You know what? If you're an attorney and you get these six CLE credits, you're going to pay $58 and some change per credit. That's a heck of a deal.
Where'd you find that?
I did the math.
You did the math? Ah.
Yeah.
350 divided by six?
Yes.
Okay. So, that's the deal.
$58.33.
And you're not missing any conference content. It's the day before, the Friday. So Friday, you go to CLE. Saturday, you go to NJ Safe Conference, and you're good to go. So the location for that is Liberty Office Suites, formerly known as Montville Executive Suites, and they're a sponsor. Next sponsor to mention, Association of New Jersey Rifle and Pistol Clubs, gold sponsor.
ANJRPC.
Yes, ANJRPC. And they're stepping up this year huge. They're going to be doing a lot for us, a lot with us. You'll start seeing our ads in the next issue of the News and Briefs. That'll be coming out in a couple days. You'll start seeing some emails from them. And if you're a member of ANJRPC, you're going to want to be at this event. Okay, because if you're a member of ANJRPC, you probably care about what's happening with the Second Amendment. You probably care about what's happening with firearms in the state of New Jersey. And this is the definitive firearms event for New Jersey. All right. Bullet Hole, another premium range, premium retailer in New Jersey. We have the Bullet Hole, again, a gold sponsor. They were with us last year. They came all the way down to Vineland. Just like NRA did, just like Gun for Hire, just like ANJRPC had come down last year too. So the Bullet Hole, Jen there has been a great supporter. She does the NRA, Friends of the NRA, dinner up there, in North Jersey, the state dinner, you know, and, we appreciate the work that she does for the Second Amendment in the state. And we are proud to have Bullet Hole as a gold sponsor of the event, and they're returning. RTSP is back. If you're at last year's conference, you'll probably remember RTSP's firearm simulator. I believe they're bringing the simulator back again this year.
All right.
Oh yeah. So they definitely have the space for it. They're getting extra space again. They're going to be making it happen.
I'm going to have to pack that in my bag on the way out.
You got the good luck with that. I think it might be a few bags. But RTSP is coming back in a big way. And you might remember him from the book last year. Henry Rifles returned as a gold sponsor.
Henry Rifles.
Henry Rifle. That's right. Made in America or not made at all.
Beautiful guns. They have a new line out, steel. They're making steel firearms as well.
Yep. Beautiful stuff. So thank you to Mr. Imperato. for deciding to support the event. We greatly appreciate it. And those are the gold sponsors for the event.
Awesome.
We have one silver sponsor so far. You might remember them too. Firearm Support and Storage.
Oh, yes.
They are back in the mix. And we have a lot of great exhibitors signing up. There's still room. If you have a business here in New Jersey and you support the Second Amendment, you don't have to be in the firearms industry. You don't have to be an advocacy group to get exhibitor space or to be a sponsor. We're still looking for more sponsors. We're still looking for exhibitors for the event. We greatly appreciate your support getting the event paid for. We're going to be in North Jersey this year in Parsippany. We're going to have a lot of people there. We're looking at significant growth from last year.
And a great space.
A fantastic space. And, you know, as great as the speakers were that we had last year, I mean, we had outstanding speakers. Evan Knappen, Scott Buck, Anthony Calandro, Keith Pantaleone. All these guys are going to be coming back. We had some great women speakers. We had Sandra Muldoon, Aries Daniela. You know, we had people speaking, and, you know, I'm expecting them to be back too. I know Aries definitely is. In fact, I don't know. I wasn't really going to announce this, but, Aries is going to kind of be like our social media guru. Within the next few weeks, expect to see some stuff from Aries coming out on the NJ Safe social media accounts. She's going to be helping us out with that.
All right.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So you'll be seeing a lot more from Aries this year. I've kind of asking her to, you know, get out there and capture stuff for our Facebook and Twitter accounts and Instagram and all that. While she's at the conference too.
If she's not too busy listening to the wonderful cast of speakers that we have.
I think she's going to be interviewing most of them. She's going to be getting them all out there. That's kind of going to be her gig on the social media front. Is getting them up there and getting them out on the thing. You know, I had a call today talking about, this was going to be a quick update. It's going longer than I expected. I had a call today. We're building the app for the conference, right? And we've gotten some of the basic details in there, and I'm starting to see it get built out because I have a preview of the app inside the company's app, right? So I can go look at what ours looks like right now based on the information that we have so far. It's going to be awesome. I'm telling you right now, looking at this thing, it's pretty fantastic. The app's going to be a huge part of the conference. We're going to have all kinds of social features going both ways, like social integration, like complete integration. So we'll be able to pull in things from social media accounts, and we can push things out to social media accounts right from in the app. So when you're there doing a session, you can take your phone, take a photo in the session of whatever it is that you're doing. Okay, whoever it is that you're speaking, whatever it is that you're doing during the session, if it's something more interactive, if you're doing something with the exhibitor, you'll be able to take a phone, publish it inside the app, and then have that flow through to your social media account, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or whatever it is that you want to flow through to. So, I mean, we're going to be pretty tech savvy at this conference. We're going to have Wi-Fi for everybody, complimentary. So, look forward to some really cool things happening on that front.
Oh, it sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's fantastic. We're going to be able to deliver all of our content through the app with all the details about the speakers. You'll be able to connect with people. You'll be able to message other attendees. It's really, really neat stuff that we're going to have built into the app.
You haven't gotten to the big announcement yet, though.
What's the big announcement?
I'm going to be there.
That's true. We're going to have one of the premier New Jersey podcasters who doesn't live in New Jersey at the event. All the way direct from straight out of Idaho. Mr. Michael Willett.
Yep, I'm going to kiss my guns goodbye. I'm going to come to New Jersey.
That's right.
And you're
and support your fight.
That's right. What you do, what you do. Absolutely. You're for everybody. So, yep, Mike's coming again this year. We're very excited. You already bought your plane tickets, I believe, right?
I sure did.
Yeah. So you're committed now.
Committed.
Yeah, that's awesome. So that's our update for NJ Safe. If you have ideas about NJ Safe or you're thinking about something, remember it's going to be on July 30th. You want to get to njsafecon.net/register. That's the site to sign up. Okay. You can go to njsafecon.net and it'll have a link there for you too. But if you do /register, it'll take you right to the sign up system. All right.
Oh, and John, I only take blue M&Ms.
For the green room, blue M&Ms?
Yes.
Right.
Hope to see you guys there. We'll have some photo ops with John. You can take pictures with John.
You know, I probably shouldn't tell you this, but, you know, we're having I was having a conversation with Sean Fisher the other day. And
the man with the stash?
Yes, the man with the stash. Now, he thinks that we need to have a panda at the conference.
Oh, snap.
A life-size panda representing the podcast at the conference.
We can't do it.
Can't do it?
Panda's got to have an AR.
Panda's got to have an AR? No. That's tactical panda. He was thinking normal panda.
I see.
Of course, normal panda has a couple pistols, but
it's true. He could be CCW'ing.
Where is he CCW under? He's got a couple. He's dual. He's wearing two shoulder holsters.
Right. Or he's got it tucked under. You know, he's got a tuck.
Right.
Carry.
Right.
Inside the fur band.
Inside the fur. It's surgically implanted. Calling the Shot segment is brought to you by Justifiable Force Training. JustifiableForceTraining.com.
Calling the shots. We have the firearms industry is booming. Booming. Even in a down economy.
Kaboom.
Jobs are up almost 75%.
Booyah.
Bam. Bam.
It's fantastic.
You know what the number one state for firearms related jobs or businesses?
It's not New Jersey.
Idaho.
Is it really?
Yes.
That's awesome. What you got next?
Next we have NRA ILA, Colorado, for our friends in Colorado. Committee hearings, the House committee hearings ran into the early morning, and they still denied the people of Colorado their rights. They're not going to rescind or repeal the ban on magazines that exceeds 15 rounds. So,
nonsense.
For going into 4 years of having a bad law that they recalled 3 politicians on.
Yep.
Can't get rid of the law.
Yep.
There's still a lawsuit outstanding that's pending.
Oh, there you go.
All right, so next, we'll have a link to a South Carolina high school that just opened an on-campus shooting range.
Yay!
Booyah.
You know, our high school, South Carolina. There was a shooting range at our high school. I never saw it, but I believe it was under the...
You never went on it?
I was never on the range. It was under the gym, wasn't it?
It was the old pool area.
Right.
So they had a built a wood floor to fill in the pool, and then that's where we shot archery. Did you ever shoot archery back there? It was also a gymnastics. I know you're huge into gymnastics.
Not really.
They also did gymnastics there, but nobody liked going in there because it was so hot all the time. You know, there's no windows, there's no ventilation because it was built to be a pool.
Right.
It was always hot and stuffy in there.
I can't imagine it was a very good range with no ventilation.
Yeah. Yeah. But we did our archery there.
Okay.
But they used to shoot 22s in there.
Yeah. No, I don't think we did archery for us. I wish they would have done archery for us instead of some of the stupid games we did.
Man, there's so much cool stuff in that old building.
Yeah, right.
All right. Final and last one. But not least, May 1st, NRA membership dues increase by $5. So if you're a year, 3 year, 5 year member, get another membership in before May 1st.
There you go.
You can do that at integrityarmory.com.
Get those re-ups in.
Yep, re-up. Hopefully you can vote by the time you re-up too.
There you go. All right, that's going to do it for us this week. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Bear Arms Show. If you enjoyed today's show, please head over to iTunes to rate and leave a review. This helps spread the word, and we thank you for it. For show notes or updates about new episodes, please visit www.beararmshow.com.